I never, kimat, I don't think kimat, I never give an introduction to what I'm going to say. But I'm going to depart from that for a very particular reason. When Mr. Rosen first mentioned to me this idea of ACT, I sort of said, what? And then I looked online, and I saw the modules, and I saw the initiatives, and I saw what you people are doing, and I said, wow, somebody finally got it. And I have to tell you, I personally am very, very moved. I'm despoiled is the word I'm looking for. I'm going to tune down the mic a little bit though. I am very, very, very moved by the fact that there are people who understand the concept called change, understand that's what we're here in the world for, understand that there are techniques, understand that there are systems. And Ashrecha v'tov lach, Mr. Rosen, I thank you for all of your good work, the rest of the committee, for your effort and energy. May Hashem give you all a bracha that you should continue, and this organization should see tremendous, tremendous hatzlacha. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us, Tan Rabbanan a brisa, Lo'olam ye'adam an benusan kehillel, a man should always be humble as Hillel, and should not be makbid, should not be harsh, should not be strong, should not be makbid as Shammai is. And now the Gemara is going to go on to tell us an example, the quintessential example of humility. A quick aside, many of you are familiar with the basic outlines of the Gemara, but let's pay careful attention as the story plays out, because I think there are tremendous insights to learn from it. There were two individuals who made a wager one against the other. The wager surrounded the issue of whether they could get the great Hillel to lose his temper. And the amount of money that they wagered was quite a large sum. It was 400 zuz. And one of them said to his friend, I'll accept the wager. I will get Hillel to lose his cool. The man was not casual about it. The man planned it out very carefully. He went Erev Shabbos to Hillel's house, and the Gemara relays detail by detail what he attempted to do. He waited till it was Erev Shabbos late, getting closer to Shabbos, when Hillel would in fact be in the bath. Hillel was in fact bathing for Shabbos. Halach avar Pesach Beso, he walked to the entrance of the house of Hillel, and he said, Mikan Hillel, is there somebody named Hillel? Somebody named Hillel around here? Hillel, the Nasi, heard his name being called. And he comes out, cloaks himself in his robe, and says, Bini, my son, Mata Mavakesh, what do you want? She'ele yeshli lishol, I have a question to ask. And then this man goes on to ask his question. Shal Bini, Hillel says, ask, please. Why is it that the heads of the Babylonians are flat? Hillel answered the question. She'ela gedola she'alta bini. My son, you've asked a very great question. The answer is because the midwives who deliver the babies are not learned, they're not wise, and apparently they flatten out the head. The man did not succeed in getting Hillel angry. He left. A few minutes later, comes back to the house. Mikan Hillel, is there somebody, a Hillel who lives around here? Same routine. Hillel puts his robe on, comes out. Yes, my son, what can I do for you? Yeshli she'ela lishol, I have a question to ask. Shol bani, ask my son, what is it? The man asks a second question. Why is it that the eyes of the Talmudim are slanted? She'ela gedola she'alta bani. Hillel didn't say, you're bothering me every Shabbos to ask me why the Chinese have slanted eyes. She'ela gedola, this is a very good question. A very significant question you've asked. The reason is because they live amongst the sand, and hence their eyes have become slanted. Again, the man did not succeed. He left and came back a third time. Mikan Hillel. Is there somebody named Hillel? And a third time, Hillel puts on his robe, walks out, and he says, yes, my son, what do you want? She'ela le yeshel lishol. I have a question to ask. Shal bini, shal. Why is it that the feet of the Africans are wide? Amalo bini, my son, she'ela gedola she'alta, you've asked a very great question. Because they live amongst the sand amongst the reeds, hence the feet have to be wide. And then the man said as follows, She'elos harbe yeshli lishol. I have many questions to ask. But I'm afraid that maybe you'll become angry at me. The Gemara tells us, Hillel closed his robe, sat down and says, Kol she'elos yeshlecha lishol sha'al. All of the questions that you have to ask, please ask. At which point the man said, Atahu Hillel? Are you Hillel? She'korin oscha, that they call you Nasi, they call you the Prince, President of Israel? Amalohain, Hillel answered, yes. Amalo, the man said, Imatahu, if that's true, lo yarbek hamos lo Yisrael, there should be none others like you in Israel. And Hillel said, why? What have I done wrong? And the man said, because of you I lost 400 zuz, a king's ransom. What do you mean? And the man explained, I made a wager to get you to lose your temper, and I didn't succeed, and I've lost a tremendous amount of money. There should be none other like you in Israel. And then Hillel responded with a very fascinating response. Be careful with your words. Kidaihu Hillel, it is worthy for Hillel that you should lose 400 zuz and another 400 zuz, and Hillel should not lose his temper. And that is the Gemara. And before we study the Gemara, I want to point out the Marsha's observation about this Gemara. And that point is that this man was very, very wise. He understood that the amount of money being wagered was quite a large sum, and he was not cavalier in his attempt to get Hillel to lose his temper. Every step was cunningly crafted. Number one, he comes Erev Shabbos. You ever hear the expression, the Satan is merake, the Satan dances Erev Shabbos? People could be calm the whole week, everybody's placid, everything's fine. And Erev Shabbos, it's busy, there's a tumult. Tempers tend to flare. He waits at the outside of Hillel's door, and he says the following expression, Mikan Hillel. Is there somebody named Hillel around here? Hillel was the Nasi Yisrael. All questions came to his address. He was the leader of the Jewish people. He was not some unknown person. Number three, he waits outside for the Nasi, for one of the most, if not the most important man in the Jewish nation, to come out to him. Then he asks this major question. This major question that had to be asked Erev Shabbos when Hillel's in the bath, why is it that the Babylonians' heads are flat? When you talk about a klutz kasha, that's it. And he does it again, and he does it a third time. Why are the eyes of certain peoples slanted? Why are the feet wide? Clearly irrelevant questions. But as the Marshal points out, it's the last retort that was the most difficult. I have many, many questions to ask, but I'm afraid that I may get you angry. Explains the Marshal, that's the secret that he was waiting for. Because didn't I already show you? I'm Hillel. I don't get angry. You're not going to get me angry. Well, you'll never get mad. Well, you'll... And that is arguably one of the greatest traps. When he said to Hillel, I have many questions to ask, but I'm afraid I may get you angry, after Hillel showed his patience, And that's the Gemara. But the question I'd like to ask to see if we can open up this Gemara is as follows. This is a beautiful illustration of anger management. If we were looking for a ideal description, a beautiful story that shows how much a human being can learn to control themselves, this would be it. But that's not what the Gemara tells us is the secret to this story. And the Gemara says, Le'olam, a man should always be as humble as Hillel. Meaning this is an illustration of humility. Look at the humility of Hillel. Look how humble he is. But that seems to be a very poor title, and not at all the point of the story. The story is a classic illustration of anger management. It doesn't seem to have much to do with humility, and yet the Gemara claims that this is the quintessential example of humility, and the question is why? Why didn't the Gemara simply say that it's anger management, it's kas? Why did the Gemara attribute this to the trait of humility? And to answer this question, we'll spend a little time this evening, Hashem, on this concept called anger. But before we do that, I want to quickly make an observation. And that is, Chazal tell us that even a Sefer Torah needs a mazel. There are some Sifrei Torah that are read every Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos. Some Sifrei Torah are only read once a week, some Sifrei Torah but once a month. There's some Sifrei Torah that could sit in the Aron Kodesh year after year untouched. Even a Sefer Torah needs a mazel. And I believe that that same concept applies to a very lonely mitzvah in the Torah. I guarantee you will not experience a sukkah without a lulav. You will not experience Pesach without a matzah. That's a mitzvah that's central, and it's a mitzvah that's very popular. Yet there is a mitzvah that is almost unheard of. And that is a mitzvah aseh min haTorah, a full positive commandment in the Torah to work on one's midos, to improve one's character traits. And the reason I mention that is because, again, when I saw ACT and I saw the modules and I said, wow, that's astounding, because I've been around. I've been teaching for many, many years. I've been around the country. I've been in other places. I have not yet seen this. And if you ask me the mitzvah in our generation that doesn't seem to have a mazel, it's the mitzvah aseh, v'alachta b'derach, of going in the ways of Hashem, being mesakein, fixing, improving your character traits. And again, whilst this group here, ashreichem v'tov lechem, is very praiseworthy, the reality is that very few people get it, and very few people understand that it is as much incumbent upon a Jew to improve his or her character traits as it is any other mitzvah in the Torah. It is a full, complete mitzvah. However, here's the point. It is not a mitzvah to have good midos. That's your temperament. That's your nature. That may be how you were born. Yisrael in Geresh Yud Zayin says, you could witness a person acting with very, very fine midos. Very, very careful how they speak. And that person might be the equivalent of a kofer, of one who denies Hashem, one who doesn't work on the mitzvahs. Because if that's the person's nature, if that's their temperament by birth, then it shows nothing of their taking upon themselves the Torah way, because the mitzvah is not to have good character traits. The mitzvah is to improve your character traits, to take them from level 3 to level 5, from 5 to 7, from 7 to 12, to constantly improve all of the various traits: humility, anger, jealousy, generosity, patience, all of the gamut of the character traits, to move them forward, to be constantly focused on asking myself, how do I do this? How do I improve? And that is the mitzvah that I believe has very little mazel and doesn't have much idea, knowledge about. And with that as an introduction, let's focus today on this midah called kas, called anger. Now, anger is a very difficult midah to work on. And I want to say something that may sound obvious, but it bears speaking out anyway. The boss says something. He says something that's out of line, and he ranks you out in front of many other people, and you go home, and the entire way home, you're seething. The car ride, the tape is playing over in your brain. Every line he says is repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated. And by the time you get home, you're so livid, you're so angry, you walk upstairs, you close your bedroom door, and you smash your fist right through your bedroom door. That is not an intelligent thing to do. We could argue that if it was the boss standing there and you would punch him, we could argue whether that's intelligent. But surely everyone would agree that for you to break your object, for you to break your door, is not intelligent. And that's the first point that we need to focus on. And that is that even though the world will use the words emotions, kas is not only not intelligent, it's not even really an emotion. Kas, which we'll loosely call that state of anger, that state of fury, is a midah. A midah is a character trait that's linked within the nefesh, within the soul of the person. And Chazal explained to us certain ways that it manifests itself, certain things that contribute to its increase, certain things that contribute to its decrease. And Chazal teach us how to navigate this difficult path of improving the midah. And the first yisod, I believe, that comes in terms of learning how to deal with anger, is something that I learned as a young kolo person. My daughter's, I think it was her third birthday, and I made this very difficult discovery. The party was, I guess, at 2 o'clock, and Seder was over at a certain time, so by 1:30, And I came rushing into the house, and I had myself a full half hour, and I found myself in big trouble. 50 balloons, 30 minutes, they had to be blown up and taped to the wall. Now, if you've ever tried to blow up 50 balloons in 30 minutes, or it's really not even 30 minutes, really 15 minutes, you quickly find that it's a very difficult trick. I discovered at the next birthday party the way to do it. Not at that one. That one I was hyperventilating and having a tough time. But at the second party, I discovered the way you do it. You don't blow the balloon up. First, you stretch it. You stretch the balloon, and then it blows up so much more easily. And my friends, that is the first yesod to understanding the midah of kas, of anger. You see, if I've never gotten angry before, the balloon is pretty tight. And it's going to take a major stimuli to get me angry. It's going to take you really stepping over the line, really saying something to get me to hit that level of being angry. But once I'm there, the balloon is stretched. And it takes a lot less a second time to get me to the same level, the same intensity, the same fury. And that midah, like a balloon, the more you use it, the more it stretches, the easier it is to get to that same intensity of anger with much less stimuli, much less input. And the more it stretches, the more it stretches, the easier and easier it becomes to get angry. And if you allow yourself to really lose your temper on a regular basis, it takes nothing. But it's not just that it takes nothing. I get furious. That same level of anger that 2 years ago would have taken World War III to have gotten me that angry, now anything can get me that angry because I allowed it to stretch, I allowed that midah to expand, and now it takes much less to get me to that level of anger. And the flip side. What happens if you don't get angry for a while? Not even because you necessarily mastered the midah. Not even necessarily because you worked on it. But just, it happens to be there was no stress, no tension, none of the normal stimuli were coming at you for a while. That balloon, which was very much expanded, slowly, slowly starts to retract. And now it's going to take more to get you angry. And if you spend enough time not getting angry, not getting angry, not getting angry, not getting angry, the balloon tightens. And again, it takes a lot more to get you angry than it did before. And so if you'd like my opinion as to what is the first step in working on anger, this may sound simplistic, but the answer is don't get angry. Don't get angry and you don't get angry. But don't get angry and you can't get angry. Because if you don't get angry and you don't get angry and you don't get angry and you don't get angry, the midah shrinks. And it takes so much more to get you angry, so much more to get you to lose it, and you began to master the midah. And the only difficult problem is, gee golly, how do I not get angry? How do I spend the 6 weeks, 6 months, maybe the 2 years of allowing the midah to shrink, to shrink, to shrink, to shrink by not getting angry, because there are constantly things that get me ticked off, constantly things that get me bothered. And by the way, my friends, let's not make a mistake. Fury, af, chema. That's not the only description of kas. I'm ticked. I'm upset. Sometimes you may not even notice it. It could be a subtle, so, and it passes, but that's anger. Low level, but it's anger. And the key to mastering this midah is not getting angry. The difficult problem is, how do I not get angry? And I think once we begin understanding a little bit more about this midah, we'll see that there are very particular ways for a person not to get angry. And what I'd like to do now is study the anatomy of a rage. Let's watch together. And this is, by the way, it's a phenomenal thing. If you could ever be detached enough to watch yourself lose it, it is the most colorful, humorous thing you've ever seen in your life. You ever watch somebody else get angry? They're screaming, they're yelling, they're making ugly faces, and they're so ridiculous looking. That's you. If you can detach yourself from you and recognize that I'm screaming and ranting and raving like a madman about some nonsense, if you're able to step outside yourself, you'll see it's a very strange thing, this being a human. But in any case, let's study the anatomy of a rage. So here's what happens. Somebody says something. At that point, I'm not furious. At that point, I'm not really very angry at all. I'm ticked. What he said was not called for, inappropriate, and really should not have been said. And that's when it starts building. Because I start thinking about it. That really was a chutzpah. That guy, after what I did for him, after the amount of time I spent helping him, he said that line. And he said that line in public. And there were 10 other people there. And I can't believe it. And the tape plays and plays and plays and plays until I'm furious. You see, you don't start furious. It's very, very rare that somebody says something and it's instantaneous volcano eruption. Typically, much more typically in the anatomy of a cause, the person says something and I'm a little bit ticked. And then I start playing it in my brain. I start playing that tape. I start playing it and thinking about it, dwell upon it. I get angrier and angrier and angrier. And here we have one of the great secrets to Kass. With all due respect to Freud, with all due respect to the world of psychology, listen to the words of the Or HaTzaddikim. He says, it is a wise person who will not speak when they're angry. Because when you speak when you're angry, you become more angry, and more angrier still. Do you ever notice somebody said something to you and you go to tell them off? And when you go to tell them off, you're not more calm after you're done. You're twice as angry. Because as you speak it out, as you dwell upon it, as you explain to him exactly what he did that was wrong, you are becoming heated, you're becoming more angry, and that anger builds. It is not a wise person who speaks when he's angry, and is a wise person who is shosak, who is quiet. And that, Derech HaTzaddikim tells us, is an eitzah. But the point is understanding that the midah begins as a little sort of tick and then grows and grows and grows is one of the first tricks to learning how to work with the midah. And I'll explain to you what I mean. I'm now speaking with a wireless mic. And the reason why I'm speaking with a wireless mic is because I was a high school rabbi for 15 years. And at some point I just blew my voice out. And I found that even in the classroom I could not speak without a microphone. And to sit with a microphone like this is a... So I got myself a wireless mic. It wasn't anything that's fancy, but it was wireless, and I put the little speaker in the back. And this is very hard to understand, but one day, some of the guys were being a bit restless. Now, if you've ever watched high school guys, they have a tendency to get a bit restless. And I got a little bit upset. And as I'm speaking, my voice didn't show it, but there was static from coming from the speaker. And I was like, what's that static about? Then I, fellow stopped what he was doing. I went back to teaching. And then a little while later, again, somebody was doing something, whether he was playing with something or distracting somebody else. And then again, I got a bit heated. And again, there was static. Now, my friends, to this day, I do not know if maybe I started rubbing my shirt against the microphone or there was some aura that was emitted. But the bottom line is, I told the guys, do you hear that? Do you hear that static? And everybody said, yeah. Do you guys know that every time I'm getting angry, there's static in the speaker? And you know what that did for me? I stopped getting angry and cheer. You know why? I wasn't really angry with the guys. These are great guys. I love the guys. I just, get a little ticked. But once I became aware that I was getting ticked, just that awareness cured the problem. And I told the guys that, and it became a big joke and cheer. Oh, Rebbe's getting angry. He's going to be static. And it was it. I didn't get angry again. And my friends, there's a very important reason why this works. You see, when you're angry, typically it starts as a very simple little tick. At that point, any of us could quench it, could squelch it, could put it away, and it wouldn't bother us. The problem is when it builds. And if you're simply aware of the fact that there is a mitzvah to work on anger, there is a positive commandment, it is a very important thing to do, just being aware of that can bring you very far. In fact, I have a very simple eitzah. If you would like to solve much of the anger issues that you deal with, it's a very simple tool. It's a 3x5 index card. You keep it in your pocket and walk around with it for 2 weeks. Anytime you feel yourself getting ticked, pull it out, make a little mark, put it back in your pocket. And I guarantee just that self-awareness, just that being aware, will dramatically decrease the amount of times that you get angry. Because when it's that little ticked, anybody can stop that. Anybody's a gibor enough to win against that. The problem is when it goes from being ticked to dwelling upon it, to think upon it, to letting it really build, till I really feel that anger in the core of my essence. When it hits that level, nobody can stop it.
I'm so furious. Shimshon HaGibor maybe could stand up to that type of anger. But don't let it get there. If you don't let it get there, if it's a little tiny thing, anybody could stop it. The problem is we speak, we dwell, we allow it to fester. And when you allow it to fester, then it goes from very small to big. And the first technique for working on kas is self-awareness. Keep your index card in your pocket, walk around, just make a little mark when you get ticked, and you'll find very quickly many of those stimuli will just go away and you recognize them for what they are. But I think there's another step in studying the anatomy of a rage that will help us even more dealing with anger. And that's to understand that there's a step before you're ticked. You're ticked. That is already a step in the process too far. And to illustrate this, the women, I hope, will excuse me for using a guy's example. But imagine, ladies, you're walking with your husband on a Shabbos afternoon, and from across the street, you hear a fellow call out, "Hey, ugly! You're just as much of a geek now as you used to be!" And you're aghast, and you look at, who's that behemoth who's screaming across the street that insult? And then you see your husband turn, his face lights up, he runs across the street, and he hugs this guy, they're hugging again. What? Oh, they were high school buddies, and that's just the way guys talk. Okay, now let's analyze what happened. "Hey, geek, you're just as ugly as you used to be," has a certain connotation, but it requires me to interpret it for me to get angry. Who said it? When was it said? Why did he say it? What did he mean? Will determine how I interpret those words. If it's an old buddy from high school and that's just the way guys kibitz, so it's cute. If it's somebody who I have a real, who I've had words with before, I'm going to get very angry. And understanding that any stimuli has about a nanosecond of life, that very, very small window of time, it's my job as the human to interpret it, is really the secret to understanding how to deal with kas. Because I can change the way I interpret this stimuli. I can change the impetus, and I can not only not let it grow from a little bit tick to angry, I can eliminate it at its very core. And I want to give you a few examples. Some of these, I'm telling you before we start, are very difficult. Some of these are very high madrigas, but in the end we'll get to one that's not so difficult. My Rebbe, the Reshiva, used to say often, imagine the following. Imagine you open the Sunday paper, you read the numbers, oh my goodness, six, the lotto, $10 million, whoa! I'm rich. And then somebody steps on your toe. What's your reaction? You hug the guy, oh, did you hear the news? Did you hear the news? What if somebody in that time of your elation, your joy, said one of those silly lines that typically would get you angry or ticked off, one of those nasty, crude lines? You wouldn't be angry because you're so happy. You're so full of joy that nothing can shake you. The first, which is the most difficult of the techniques in mastering interpretation, is to be happy. If you're happy, you don't get angry. If you're really, truly filled with joy, it's very difficult to get you angry. If you wake up in the morning and say, "Wow, I have a chance to grow, I have a chance to accomplish, Hashem gave me another day. What can I do with this day? I have a plan, I have a purpose, I have a reason for existence." And with that, there's a joy that sinks into the core of your essence. It's very difficult to get that person angry. Because whatever stimuli hits them is interpreted for the good, doesn't bother them, doesn't enter their shell. And that is the first technique, albeit the most difficult, because that does not come so easy to the human. That certainly is one of the goals of learning Musar, and certainly one of the goals of a Jew as he grows, but at the end of the day, that's not something that comes so easily to us humans. Let's deal with the second one, that's also not so easy. How do you take an insult? Now, a lot of people have trouble dealing with a compliment, but how do you take an insult? So listen to the words that the Chovas Levavos says. He says as follows, the correct attitude that a person should have when he's insulted is, he says the words, Thank you, Hashem, for being Megala, for revealing Ma'at Meharbe. Thank you, Hashem, for revealing a little bit of my flaws from the many that I have. You see, what the Baal B'Tochan understands is that no human being can help me, nor can they harm me. If these words were not intended to be heard by my ears, that human could never have expressed them. And when he says those words, there's a reason I am supposed to hear those words. And I'm supposed to sing Shevach V'odah, praise to my Creator. Thank you, Hashem, for revealing a little bit of my flaws so that I can then work on it. And, clearly, if a person was on a very high level of bitachon, if a person really understood that everything in this world is controlled by Hashem, there's no leaf that falls from the tree, there's no action that goes on, certainly there's no human being who can harm me or can help me without Hashem directly intervening and controlling that, then there's very little place for anger. And there's very little place for getting ticked. And everything is interpreted in a very, very different way. But again, that's not so easy. It is a goal, but it's a 20-year goal, maybe a 40-year goal. Working on bitachon, seeing Hashem's involvement in my life, is something that requires an awful lot of focus, energy, working. And it's something that we get, and we forget, we get a little bit more, and it slips. And it's not so easy. But it is the second way that can allow us to reinterpret so that the tick doesn't even begin. In that nanosecond, in that first moment of interpretation, there is no tick because those words are spoken to me from Hashem. He's but the puppet mouthing the words. There's a message to me that I'm grateful to Hashem that He delivered. But again, a bit difficult to work on. But it's a third way that I think is far more nogea, far more applicable to us. And I think one of the best illustrations of that is as follows. There was once a gentleman who called out to his son to come, and before he knew it, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Gadol Hador, looked at him and said, "Yes." And the man said, "Yes." And the man said, I don't mean to trouble the Rishiva, what is it? Rav Moshe said, "You called, what could I do?" And it took the man quite a number of moments to piece together what had happened. He was on one side of the street. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Gadol Hador, was on the other side of the street. His little 13-year-old son, Moshe, was on the same side of the street of Rav Moshe. He didn't see Rav Moshe. He called out to his son, "Moshe, come here. Moshe, come here." The Gadol Hador crossed the street and said, "Yes, can I help you? What can I help you?" That, my friends, is a classic illustration of humility. What happens to a humble man? His toes very rarely get stepped on. His ego is very rarely assaulted. Because who am I anyway? What am I? I'm but a small individual. I'm not some big, hotshot, important person. And said something, "All right, listen, we all say things. I sometimes say things that are not so nice. Other people do." He said something, "So what?" You see, it's very difficult to get a humble man angry. But watch the flip side. Do you know who I am? I am the very, very hush of important person. You don't even have a clue to how big I am, how important, how significant. And the more I puff myself up, the more my sunburnt ego expands, the more sensitive I am to anything that you'll say, because there's nothing that you could say that will ever treat me with the honor and accord due to such a big, hush of man like me. With this big inflated ball of an ego that's so sensitive to anyone's touch, I walk around and I'm constantly insulted, constantly angry, because the world is constantly poking at me, jabbing at me. And here we come to one of the core understandings of anger. All anger stems around one thing: frustration and a feeling of powerlessness. When I feel frustrated because I don't have power, when I feel frustrated because my attempts have been thwarted by you, you did that to me. And what brings about the anger is the sense of powerlessness and the frustration that comes from it. And once you dwell upon that for a while, you quickly understand that there's a very key relationship between ego and anger. A Balgaiva is always angry, and a humble man is almost never angry. Because the more powerful you feel, the more self-important you feel, the more you become frustrated by, how could it be? I told you 3 times to do that. A chutzpah, I should tell you once is enough. Twice, 3 times, I, the great me, feel powerless, frustrated, angry. Who am I anyway? I'm a little guy. How much power do I have? Hashem created the world. Hashem runs the world. I'm just the occupant of this body. What could I accomplish? What could I really do? With that humble sense, when I've asked you to do something, once, twice, three, all right, listen, you didn't do it. So what? Anger is directly related to arrogance. Humility dispels anger. And I think, my friends, that is the understanding of this Gemara. Would you like to know why the Gemara says, look at the humility of Hillel? It didn't say, look at his anger management. Look at how he controlled his kas. Because what you're seeing is a perfect illustration of humility. And let's go through each step as the Mashal explains it. What the man was doing was prodding, pushing every point to find Hillel's arrogance. Is there a dude named Hillel around here? What do you mean, Hillel? The Nosos of Yisrael, the man's name goes out from one corner of the earth to the other. You don't know my name? You don't even know who I am? And he stands there and waiting for the Nosos of Yisrael. The whole world waits to come into the Nosi's house. And this Baal Chutzpah waits outside for the Nosi to come out. And what is it, Erev Shabbos, that he's bothering the Nosi with? Why is it, a big Shiloh, why is it that the Babylonians' heads are flat? You nudnik, what do you care, what do I care? Stop bothering me. But that wasn't Hillel's reaction. Each question, one by one, until the final one. Until he says the words, I'm afraid to ask you all the questions I have. Because maybe you'll get angry. Ha! Me get angry? Me, the great humble person? Do you know how humble I am? Do you know how much humility is within my bones? You'll never get me angry. That was the ultimate test of anova, of humility, because he was pushing the button right there. And the reason why the Gemara tells us this is an illustration of humility, la'olam ya'adam on the nosan ki hillel, a man should always be as humble as Hillel, is because that is the secret to anger management. Are there other techniques? There sure are. If you take out your index card and you stop it when you just ticked and you don't allow it to grow, that's a very important technique. If you learn to be quiet and not let it fester, if you learn not to allow that tape to play in your brain, that's an important technique. If you become a person who's happy, truly in the sense of purpose, then it doesn't even get to the level of ticked. Because in that nanosecond of interpretation, just like that fellow across the street, hey, ugly, in that split moment of interpretation, I see it, it's a joke. If I'm joyful, if I'm happy, I don't get angry. If I'm a Baal Bitochen, if I really know that Hashem controls every action on this planet, I also don't get angry. But more than anything, when we understand that anger stems from a sense of powerlessness, we understand the direct relationship between arrogance and anger. And the flip side, humility, and not getting angry. If a person learns to just sort of like put a hole in my big, big shot ego, just sort of like comes down a little bit, I don't get angry. Me ani, uma ani, who am I anyway? What kind of big shot am I? How much power do I have? How important am I? And once I start coming down from my high place, I automatically interpret things differently. I automatically view things differently, and I don't get angry half as much as I did before. However, it requires a lot of motivation to work on anger. It's a mitzvah, let's say, we know that. We have an organization called ACT, which has all of the paraphernalia, but at the end of the day, to change me is one of the most difficult things on the planet. Granted, it's the Gra's line, that that's the purpose of creation, and more than that, the Vilna Gaon says, "Vimlav kein lam lochaim, why do you have life otherwise?" But at the end of the day, changing me is difficult. And I'd like to share with you one piece of motivation. If you want to be motivated to work on anger, one simple observation that I think has a big impact in that area. Here's the story. There was once a rather important samurai. And he went to a Zen master, and he asked the Zen master the following question. Could you describe to me hell? Describe it to me. Zen master recognized the samurai.
This samurai was a bit proud and had a bit of a temper. The Zen master looked up and said, "To a lout like you, I should waste my time trying to describe hell?" Samurai turns red, red as a beet, a proud man insulted. He reaches for the scabbard, is about to pull out a sword. He says, "Do you know that I could kill you for your impudence?" Zen master turns to him and says, "That's hell." And my friends, the point is, said by Chazal, Gimel Eilem Chaim, there are three people who have no life. A rachsan, a hot-tempered person, has no life. Have you ever seen a person angry smile? It's not pleasant. "I'm furious, I'm so ticked." Food does not taste good when you're angry. Friends don't bring you joy when you're angry. Nothing brings you pleasure when you're angry. And if you get angry a lot, it affects your whole simchas achayim, and achayim eino achayim, that person's life is not a life. Their self-inflicted misery is what they're experiencing, because anger is a very, very ugly trait that has a great cost to me. I gain very little. Even if I punch my boss in the jaw, there's very little I gain by it. I will not keep my job. I will not put food on my table. And surely if I don't take revenge on him, but rather punch my door, break my table, scream at my kids, scream at my wife, or whatever else we typically will do in anger, I've gained nothing. When I get angry, I have hurt me. You see, if every time I get angry, you felt pain, no. Granted, I'm being mavatal mitzvah say, but at least I gain from it. Every time I get angry and I'm seething, you, the cause of my anger, is feeling the pain. But it doesn't work that way. You cause me the pain, I walk away, and I'm angry. I'm the one who has no life, I'm the one who's suffering, and you're sitting there happy. That's the point. Kas is not intelligent. It's not smart, it's a midah. And again, loosely translated emotions of anger, but that's not really quite the sum of it. The kas is a midah, it's part of the nefesh. It grows and grows and grows the more you allow it. And if you spend your life without controlling your temper, invariably the strife, the issues, the things of life happen, and that little balloon starts getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it takes so much less to get you just as angry, and more quickly and more quickly, and the intensity, the frequency, the intensity and the duration of your anger is there, and it increases and increases until you're a person who's ein lo chayim, you have no life. Life itself has been destroyed by you. And the flip side, if you stop getting angry, if you work on it, you learn the techniques. You take around your index card. You think about long and hard what gets me from the level of ticked to really angry. It's when I play that tape in my brain, when I review it, even worse, when I speak it out. If you learn the words of the Orach HaTzaddikim and you say to yourself, "I will not speak in anger, not to that person, not to myself. I'm going to tell myself, quiet down, I don't want to hear it. But quiet down. I don't want to hear it." Because when I review it and gnaw on it, like a dog chewing on the bone, it doesn't make me happy. It makes me more angry, and more angry, more angry. And when you study the anatomy of a rage, you see that invariably it starts very, very small. Any one of us could stop it when it starts. And one of the great techniques is taking an index card, making a little mark, and you stop many, many of those things way before they explode. But the real work is even more basic than that, before it actually gets to tick. And that is, first off, finding my purpose in existence, learning Musar to understand why I'm here, learning my purpose in life, living life for the purpose, living life by intention. And when that person wakes up in the morning, there's a richness to life. There's a preciousness to life. There's a simchas achayim that people don't bother me. I just won the lotto. I just won another day of life with all of the opportunity to grow, to accomplish. There's very little that you're going to say that's going to bother me, that's going to tick me off, because I'm very happy. And it also means working on bitachon, understanding that Hashem runs the world,
and understanding that everything comes from Hashem, including those stupid, callous lines that people invariably say, there's a message to me in it. Whether it's directed to me to teach me how to work on myself, or directed to me to teach me how not to be insensitive to others, that's from Hashem. And again, that requires bitachon, and requires some work. But this lesson that we learn from Hillel is even more easy to adopt. And that is for me to work on this concept called humility, to recognize that I'm but a humble, simple person. There's not much power that I really have, not much that I can really control, not much that's really, really under my rulership. And when I get it, when I finally realize it, much of the cause of anger dissipates because there's no frustration, no sense of powerlessness. But you still maintain a very strong, good self-image. Because listen carefully to the last words of that Gemara. And when the man says to Hillel, are you the man called Hillel the Nasi B'Yisrael? And Hillel says, yes. Why do you ask? If that's who you are, there shouldn't be any more like you. Why not? Because I lost 400 zuz. It is worthy if you lose 400 zuz and another 400 zuz that Hillel shouldn't lose his temper. Doesn't sound very humble. Doesn't sound very humble at all. My friends, Hillel understood exactly who he was. He understood he was a Nasi B'Yisrael. He also understood that he worked on himself. He also understood that he was exhibiting exemplary midos. He was not clueless. He was not living in oblivion. But he also understood that Hashem created me. Hashem made me. I am but the occupant of this body. And if you really want to work on humility, I have one mushal. One mushal that I think brings great clarity. Because we're told over and over that a human being is obligated to understand my importance. And not only am I obligated to understand my importance, probably more than any other issue, how much you accomplish in this world and what you do will be based on your sense of self, your sense of self-worth, and your sense of self-importance. And if you don't hold of yourself, I guarantee there's very little you'll accomplish, there's very little you do, and the more you hold of yourself, the more you know how important you are, the more you know how significant you are, the more goals you'll set, the more you'll reach for, the more you strive for, the more you'll accomplish. And isn't that a contradiction? I have to say, Hashem would have created the whole world for one human being, and that human being is I, and yet I'm supposed to be humble? That's an utter, complete contradiction. If I have an understanding of my importance, then I can't be humble, and if I'm humble, I can't understand my importance. And I'd like to share with you a mushroom that I think bridges this gap. Imagine we go to a work site and we see Joe the crane operator. He's a corpulent fella. He's got his beer belly over there, smoking two packs of cigarettes a day. And he's operating the crane. The crane picks up these rocks, puts it down, picks it up, puts it down. And you go over to Joe and, Joe, you know, look at you. Two packs a day, look at a pot belly. You know, you really got to go to the gym, work out, get in shape. Joe says, what? Work out? You know what I do all day? I lift heavy boulders all day long, lifting and putting down, lifting and... I don't need the gym. I'm lifting thousands of tons all day long. What Joe is misunderstanding is he's lifting nothing. The crane is lifting. He's just a little guy operating the levers. And when we get that, we'll understand life. Hashem put me in the body of a human. And Hashem says, for that human, I would have created the whole world. The rivers, the planets, the skies, the ocean, all of it. I would have created for you and you alone. Go out there, accomplish, do, live your life. But also understand that your body is but a crane. I'm the little operator, the little Joe, in there telling arms to move. I didn't make the arms, I didn't make the brain, I didn't make the lips. I don't know how to stretch skin to make it fit just right over the jawbones. I am but the little guy inside making the arms move, making the lips move. But I am like Joe the crane operator. When I do a great thing, when I take a mighty, mighty act and I bring it forth into this world, I understand it's Hashem's crane, Hashem's arms, Hashem's brain. It's Hashem's world. What have I done? I'm that little guy. What do you mean? Look what you've done. You moved the mountain. Both are true. A human can accomplish worlds. A single act is immeasurably chashuv. But at the end of the day, I'm but that little guy inside making the arms move. And understanding that balance is understanding the balance of humility, yet understanding importance,
And with that, person has a healthy sense of self, but also doesn't get angry, because at the end of the day, it's Hashem's world, Hashem created it, and Hashem runs it. May Hashem grant you all this tremendous organization called ACT, the ability to continue spreading the word, getting more people involved, moving the Klal Yisrael forward. May you all have a tremendous Siyata Deshmaya.